This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
Daylight breaks over the ridge. The hounds strike. No crowds, no cameras. Just a track and the hounds that bring the story to life. That's what this show's about. Dogs, dirt roads, early mornings, and the people who live it. This is Creekside Chronicles. Hounds, hunting, and heritage. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, houndsman, hunter, and lifelong student of the outdoors. Here, we chase more than game. We chase knowledge about hounds, hunting, and living the outdoor life the right way. From bear country to back roads, this is where the hunt meets heart, and every story runs a different trail. So pull up your chair by the creek, leash up your best hound, and let's get after it together. Performance starts in the feed. Inukshuk's high-fat content fuels long runs and hard hunts, giving dogs the steady energy they need, while quality protein supports faster recovery after the work is done. That's why I trust Inukshuk dog food. Packed with energy and nutrition, dogs need to go further, run harder, and recover stronger. If you want extreme performance, you can look them up at Inukshuk Professional Dog Food or CoreyNutrition.com. Welcome back, gang, to another episode of Creekside Chronicles. The weather has broke. It was almost 80 degrees the other day. Got to spend a little time on the river fishing. Went trout fishing yesterday. Let me follow up from our gear stuff from last week. So went trout fishing. So I decided to put a little bit of heavier pair of socks on because I'm going to be wading, right? And my feet get cold through the rubber waders. So the pair of socks that I actually had in the picture on the Facebook post for last week, I put those on my darn tough. And I'm fishing. I've been out there for, I don't know, probably an hour, maybe close to 2 hours. And I'm like, man, that water's cold. My right foot was not. My left foot was cold, and it kind of felt wet. And I'm like, do these waders have a pair of, they got holes in them? So one of my buddies showed up, and he brought me a biscuit. So I got out of the water, walked around, dropped the tailgate, sit down, and I'm like, I'm going to pull this wader off and actually see if it's just cold or wet. So I pulled the wader off my left foot, and sure enough, my pants are a little bit wet, my sock is wet, and when I squeezed the sock on my foot, water come out of it, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I took the sock off, and I wring it out. This is like nightmares from when I was at BB's and fell in, and Derek posted a picture of it, me wringing my sock out. I said, well, you should have got a picture of it when I fell in. He said, I couldn't. I was too busy laughing. That was at my expense, but we both laughed. So I wrung my sock out, put it back on, put my tennis shoes on, and fished the rest of the day. Just to say that, merino wool, my sock was soaked. I got as much water out of it as I could, put it back on, and my feet's not wet. So I'm telling you, merino wool is a lifesaver, and it is a game changer. So that's just a follow-up. But the week before last, spent the weekend down on Santee Cooper. Me and a couple guys from work, we were chasing those big old catfish. The weather was not ideal. The wind pushed us around a little bit. It was a lot chillier than we expected. But I had my good gear with me. Again, back to last week, I had my base layers, which I needed. I took shorts thinking that it was going to be in the 70s, and boy, was it not. It was 50-ish with the wind blowing, put it down in the 40s, and being out on the water all day. Ah, yeah. So that's just how it goes, right? We laughed probably more than we should have. We missed a few, caught enough to fill the cooler, which is always a good thing. But honestly, we just enjoyed our time being out there. Like being out there laughing and joking and talking, enjoying the outdoors, right? So while I was sitting on the boat, you know, just kind of watching the clouds, you know, float across the sky, I got to thinking that we take a lot of things for granted. And let's just look at the lake. The lake access, the ability to load up, drive 5 hours, get on a boat, go fishing without asking permission from anybody. You know, that just didn't happen. It exists because somebody fought to conserve it, to manage it, to protect the public access long before we ever showed up with a rod in our hand. And it's the same with hunting. You know, just like Santee Cooper, it didn't just magically stay open and available. Our hound seasons don't just accidentally open or close. Regulations get written, bills get introduced, policies change, and whether we're paying attention or not, decisions are being made. So if we're not organized, we are vulnerable. We spend money on gas and bait, rods, dog food, tracking collars, all without hesitation. But when it comes to investing a few dollars to join an organization that protects our right to run hounds, a lot of times people are hesitant. And I've put a lot of thought into this. George and I have had a lot of questions about this. If you like hearing your dog strike and you love standing in the woods on a cold morning and you want your kids to experience the same things that you've experienced throughout life in the woods, hunting, or fishing, then getting involved is not optional at this point. So let's just look back at this year, the 2026. We all know what's happening in Virginia. You know, we had SB 4471 and SB 770, which got, none of them got past a well, one of them got to a Senate vote, 770. But it got voted down. And then the big one was the 1396, which we all did not agree with the wording of the bill. It was badly written. And, you know, we sent emails and phone calls. People were in Richmond. But that was just this year. And guys, if you think it's going away, it's not. Let's look at Mississippi, what happened. HB 828, you know, that it was trying to limit the use of hunting dogs on public and private land. It got shot down. And then look what's going on in Arizona right now with HB 2158, which is going to make bear and mountain lion predatory animals. We're not really sure what direction they're going in yet, whether that will open season year round, or it's going to give the antis more ammo to close it. We're not sure. But again, we're fighting that. What about Hawaii? Anybody keeping up with Hawaii? You know, there's proposed legislation right there that addresses concerns of pig hunting with dogs, saying that it's animal cruelty. Let's roll over to animal cruelty. Let's look at the IP-28 going on in Oregon, which would change Oregon's animal cruelty laws by removing many current exemptions that allow animals to be harvested or used as activities such as hunting, fishing, farming, and research. What does that mean? It means hunting, fishing, trapping can all become illegal. They just remove it. Okay? Farming and livestock production, animal husbandry can all be affected. And if you read through this, that even goes down to some of the vet visits and stuff. So here we are. Stuff's going on around us. Are we paying attention? So I wanted to do a little research on some of this data to make sure that I was understanding what I was being told, right? You always got to follow up to make sure. Let's look at Oregon. In 1994, they banned bear hunting and lion hunting with dogs. 1994. Let's look at Washington. 1996, they banned bear, lion, bobcat, and lynx dogs, or lynx hunting with dogs. Okay, that was initiative. And I'm saying initiative because we're going to follow up that in a second. 655. Massachusetts, they banned bear hunting with dogs in 1996 too. Let's go to Colorado. Colorado in 1992, another ballot initiative which banned hunting bear with dogs. And it was Proposition 127 that happened in 2024 in Colorado, which would have banned mountain lions, bobcats, and lynx with dogs in Colorado. But a lot of people got involved. It was a ballot initiative, and it got rejected at the ballot. So what are ballot initiatives? It is a process that lets citizens propose new laws or changing existing laws, put them directly to a vote. So they bypass the legislative process. They bypass it. So what they do is they collect signatures. They've got to have so many signatures to get it on the ballot. And if enough signatures are collected, then that measure goes on the ballot. And if voters approve it or reject it, depends on how it works. If they approve it, it becomes law. It just bypasses the whole process. And in a lot of these things I just mentioned, it was ballot initiatives. Okay, they bypassed the whole process. So, brings me back to a question that George and I have fielded a lot of. And we asked this. I asked myself after this was the question that was asked to me twice. Like, all right, I'm paying to be in an organization. What do I get for my $20, $30, $40, $50, whatever you're paying for an organization? What do I get out of that? What benefits me? So I got to thinking about me and my position. Like, okay, so I'm a member of several organizations, a couple on the hunting side, a couple on the fishing side, and I guess I've never really asked myself that question. Like, what's in it for me, right? But let's look at this, and I'm going to try to break this down as quickly as I can and just kind of run through some things. And I'm not telling you to join an organization. I'm not. That is your choice. That is your decision. A lot of people that we talk to are a little sour to say about organizations, and some people are not. So let's just run through this. And this is stuff that I broke down. And there's a reason that I'm talking about organizations, okay? So just bear with me here and we'll get to it. So if you're paying for a membership of any organization, what are you paying for? Well, most of these organizations don't carry like hundreds of thousands of dollars. So let's break it down a little bit more. What you're funding is legislative advocacy. So what does that mean? That means that you're paying for something that protects the rights that you're interested in. Legal monitoring. Okay, this was big. This go around with this legislative session was very big for this. Okay, think about it. Numerous organizations in Virginia, and I can speak for that because I did go to Richmond. We got to give a shout out to George Lambert for our organization because he was there almost every time. Every time. On his dime, on his time, putting work aside, coming back and working late in the evening so he could go be a part of this and get the facts. And he wasn't the only one. Like, numerous people from numerous organizations were involved, okay? So without saying names and saying the wrong people here and there, there was multiple people involved. But legal monitoring, the bills that impact what you're interested in this part, in this case, all three of these bills impacted me as a hound hunter, all three of them. So I was very, very interested and involved in what was going on. It gives you a voice at the table when it comes to regulations being discussed. Public education efforts that defend ethical hunting. And sometimes we get away from the data and the science-based and the management part. That's what happens with these initiative ballots. They get away from that stuff. So just kind of put it in perspective. Let's just say $30, okay? You pay $30 for a membership. You'll spend more of that in a week on gas, on food, on energy drinks or coffee or whatever. You'll spend more than that in a week. You'll spend more than that in fuel in one hunt. I promise that. And it protects every hunt that you go on. So that makes it real. So again, I'm not advocating for you to join an organization, but let's talk about it. You can do it individually, right? You don't have to be a part of an organization. You can still send emails and cut phone calls and show up as an individual. You absolutely can. And if you're one of the people that's doing that, a shout out to you, because it takes us all. It takes us all. But as an organization, people join because they feel like their voices aren't loud enough. They want to stand with others. And when they feel that their way of life is at risk, they want to be a part of that factor that stops it. So that's the main part of it. You just want to be a part of something. Like, we all want to, you know, be a part of a team or be a part of a movement. But let's go back to the individuals versus the organization. And I'm not saying verse like we're pitting it against each other. Absolutely not. You can do everything as an individual that you can in an organization. But one thing that I learned through this legislative process is strength in numbers. Let me repeat that. Strength in numbers. Memberships matter. They show engagement. They show legitimacy, community support, the economic impact. And when an organization can stand up and say, we represent 5,000 hunters, it carries weight. Because you know what one of the first questions we get asked? How many people do you represent? And when you say 10, 15, 20, I'm going to tell you, I've been doing my job in the police field for 23 years. And you can tell people's actions in their body language. And when you say 10, 15, 20, 30, 50, and they automatically dismiss you through their body language, you know that you're not going anywhere with that. And you can see that. But when you say that I represent a chapter or a national organization with thousands of membership, then you see them set back, they make eye contact with you, and you know they're listening. So membership does matter. Whether you think it does or not, those numbers matter. And I'm not trying to drive numbers here. I'm just saying that when you're sitting up there and you're listening and you're watching and you start to understand the process and what it takes to make the wheels go round, it's kind of eye-opening. So one of the things that organizations support is wildlife research, you know, habitat improvement, which I know we're not making a lot of gains on that, population monitoring, the mange, population monitoring. You know, I'm a member of Muskies Inc. Chapter 76, which is the Virginia chapter. I love the muskie fish. We've talked about it. Guys, we work so closely with the biologists. We have meetings once or twice a year that the biologists come in. We talk about data. We talk about numbers. We talk about, you know, how did the spawn go? Where are we at? What's the bigger fish? You know, they tag certain fish in certain areas. And if you pull the tag from that fish and send it back into the biologist and give them the information, you know, they give you money for it because it's important to them. This data is important. And I like being involved in that because I'm kept up to speed on what's going on. You know, it is no hearsay. There is no rumors. It's okay. The biologists sit down. We can ask them questions. They talk to us. They get on the boats with us. They go fishing with us. They tell us when they are electroshocking numbers, like what they're coming up with, what they're finding as the population is it growing? Is it maintaining? Is it decreasing? So I want to know that stuff. And being a part of that organization gives me that data for me, right? And I will say that hunters and fishermen are often the largest, well, we are the largest financial contributors to wildlife conservation in North America. You know, membership dollars go back into the resource itself. And we'll talk about that. I'm not going to get a whole lot into the Pittman-Robertson Act, but that money is split up. You get, you know, just to kind of lay it out there real quick, 11% of firearms tax goes to a treasury, 11% of hunting licenses go there, and ammunition goes there. And then it's supposed to be split up equally throughout the states. So that's something that we do as hunters that we don't even, or fishermen, that we don't even know what we're doing. Like that money goes, and that's a whole nother rabbit hole, whole nother podcast on what's going on. So just some things to bring about that what we're doing. Let's talk about the community, the hunting community, and the mentorship. Like we all post things and we all talk about, you know, take a child hunting, take a youth hunting, get the youth involved. Okay. Well, you know, beyond politics and conservation, these organizations connect people. While I was in Richmond, I talked to numerous people from other organizations. I got to meet people from across the state and connect with them. You know, it's like a networking experience for hunters, right? There's educational opportunities out there, youth programs. We talk about that, you know, events and gatherings. I mean, the VBHA is having an event in a couple of weeks here in March. You know, you can go to those events and meet people. Shared knowledge. Guys, knowledge is power. I say it all the time. You should always be learning. And knowledge is a great, great, great gift. And you can share that with your young hunters, with your new hunters. You know, you can make a, you know, you can mentor somebody. You know, all of us can go back and say, this person had a huge impact on my hound hunting or my hunting or my fishing or my life in general, because I spent so much time with them in the woods or on the water. Like, that mentorship is invaluable. And that's what some of these organizations do. They bring people together, whether we realize it or not. So one of the things that we talked about as an organization that we have lacked in, and I think a lot of, you know, both organizations on the hunting side that I'm attached to, one of our weaknesses is communication. Well, what do you mean, communication? Well, like, all this stuff was going on in Richmond, and if you weren't keeping up with Facebook and watching it very closely, it was hard to keep up with. You know, we weren't getting emails, we weren't getting, you know, you can't send newsletters out fast enough to keep up with this process. And, you know, George and I said, and I talk about George because he and I had a lot of conversations. We talked about this a lot, along with our other group. But there was so much information and it was changing so much. Like, it was hard to keep up with at times, like very hard to keep up with at times. So we have to do a better job as organizations communicating to our membership. Like, I will tell you that I know at least four different hound hunting organizations or hunting organizations that I know for a fact were in Richmond and was advocating on your behalf, but nobody knew who it was, where it was, or what was going on. But they were there and they were doing everything they could to deter and fight these bills. But we don't know that because we're not getting that stuff out. That's something we got to work on. But communication, updates and legislative efforts, that's got to be communicated. Reports have got to be communicated. We got to report on wins and setbacks. So let's talk about the three bills in Virginia real quick. Everybody says that it's a victory, it's a victory, it's a victory. It is a short-term victory. Okay, what do I mean? Because I'll promise you, next year they're going to be stronger and bigger. The landowners are not going to stop fighting this because it was a setback on their part. Yes, as a hound hunter, I can see some big holes in their argument. I can see some big holes in it. But they're going to figure that stuff out eventually, and they're going to come back swinging. So we have to be engaged, okay? And yes, those three bills were a victory to per se, even though 1396 was tabled. It's coming back. So we've got to get in front of it. And I'm sorry, guys. Like, I know a lot of people don't want to hear this. We're not hunting in 1980 anymore. You know, if you just look at the deer laws and how they've changed, the laws, how they've changed over the last 20 years, change is inevitable. Do we adapt or do we stand up, fight on the hill and risk losing everything? There's where we're at. So, like I said, we've got to do better communicating with our membership at every level to make sure that you guys are getting the information and you can make good, educated, quality decisions and stances on where you stand with some of this stuff. So let's talk about action here, because these organizations are taking action. Like I said, you may not know it because of communication, but we are monitoring these bills nonstop. I have made two really good contacts in Richmond of delegates and senators that I have asked to keep me up to date when stuff gets talked about and brought up. And my goal as an individual is to spend a little more time in Richmond getting to know these senators and delegates. That's on me. I want them to know me, and I want to know them by name and face. And that's something, that's a goal of mine, not an organization, but mine. But, you know, engaging with lawmakers, you know, communicating with wildlife agencies, the DWR, that's something that we have got to do and do a better job of it, not just slamming our fist on the table and making demands. We've got to sit down at the table and listen, right? And then when we need it, we need to be able to mobilize our members when we need it. You know, you should see the evidence that his work's being done, not just promises. And again, I think it goes back to communication. A lot of work's being done. It's just not being communicated thoroughly or in a timely manner. And again, that's hard. It's hard when you've got a membership. And one thing that we learned when we were at the outdoor show up in Fishersville is some people don't have social media. And that's where a lot of this, that's where most of us got our data or our information from. Some people just have email addresses. So, you know, you've got to be able to figure out how you can encompass your whole membership and get information to them, right? So that brings us to the communication part, like, you know, emails, alerts, newsletters, social media updates, you know, call to action when necessarily. When you're not hearing from the leadership within that organization, that can kind of show, that should show a red flag. And I don't mean a red flag like, oh, there's trouble brewing or they're not doing their job. It's the communication part has to be there, right? But let's move on to one step forward. These organizations should promote ethical hunting, respect for landowners, compliance with game laws, and a positive public image. And I cannot say that enough. And I'm going to tell you know, I'm going to revert back to my job. Most people hate the police. That's just a fact. Most people do not like the uniform. They do not like the authority. They just don't. They don't like it. But if I can make one person change their mind about how they feel about a police officer, me, myself, then what happens is they go back to their family and they tell their husband or their wife or their children or their mothers or their fathers, and now I've changed 10 people's minds by making a good impression, a positive influence with one person. So think about that. Public image has to be in a positive light. We got to do better. It's going to affect the future of policies, and a good organization understands that. So let's go back to the cost here. Okay. So we were asked through a Facebook thread post, well, I pay this money and I don't get it. I don't get anything for it. So for $30 a year, $20 a year, $15 a year, whatever it may be, $35 a year, what can I expect from my organization? And when I say my, I mean yours. Whatever organization you're a part of, or if you're not a part of, what can I do individually, right? What can I expect from it? So do you expect them to single-handedly, because this was brought up, well, I pay this money and I should be able to go to work and do my job and not have to worry about what's going on. That's what I'm paying them for. That's not correct at all. It's not correct at all. Guys, strength in numbers. Strength in numbers. Numbers matter. Membership matters. But they are taking their time and going to Richmond. They are emailing. And I think a lot of people did that. So kudos to everybody. Phone calls, emails, talking with their delegates and their senators. Sitting down and having a conversation moving forward. Like, that's the stuff that's going on that you're paying your dues are going for. It's to be a part of something bigger. It's to be a part of something that you are passionate about and want a seat at the table when you are at work. Somebody is talking for you. whether you think they are or they aren't, somebody has taken a day off work. Somebody has taken their time to go to Richmond to sit down in an office with a senator or a delegate or into a meeting room. Somebody has taken that time. So the bottom line is this. If you benefit from hunting, let's not say benefit. If you enjoy it and it's a way of life, you should help protect it. If you care about access, then you need to defend it. If you want your kids and your grandkids to hunt, then you need to preserve it. And for the money, you should expect. I expect representation. That was my biggest thing, representation and communication. That was my two answers when I asked myself that. I want transparency. I want advocacy. I want leadership. I want conservation support. Hunting has always been about responsibility to the land, to the wildlife, and to the next generation. So whether you support an organization that stands guard over these things is a simple extension of that responsibility. Guys, if we don't get involved, somebody else will. And they're not going to fight for us. Hunting with hounds has never survived on silence. It has survived because men and women are willing to stand up, to organize, and to defend it when it matters the most. Today is no different. Regulations are written by those who show up. Policies are shaped by those who engage. If houndsmen sit on the sidelines, we surrender our seat at the table. So joining an organization isn't about buying a membership card. It's about strengthening a unified voice that lawmakers and wildlife agencies cannot ignore. It's about funding advocacy, legal awareness, and representation before a bad bill becomes a bad law. It's about making sure decisions that affect our dogs, our season, and our access are made with our input, not without it. Every houndsman benefits from the groundwork of these organizations are doing. Whether it's protecting seasons, defending fair chase, or educating the public on ethical hunting practices, the question is simple. If you benefit from that tradition, are you willing to defend it? We spend thousands on trucks, dog boxes, tracking systems, feed, yet our future of our sport can hinge on a few dollars and whether we're organized. That's not politics. That's reality. Traditions don't disappear overnight. They erode slowly when good people assume someone else will handle it. If you want our children to hear a pack strike on a cold morning and feel the ground shake under the hard race, we cannot be passive observers. We have to be participants, not just in the woods, but in the fight to protect what happens there. Unity is strength. Organizations are influence. Actions are protection. If hunting with hounds means something to you, if it shaped your character, built your friendships, and connected you to the land, then standing up for it isn't optional. It's a responsibility. So let's get to work. It's going to be a wrap for this episode of Creekside Chronicles. We appreciate you spending your time with us, whether you're in the truck, in the woods, or sitting by the creek listening along. Thank you for walking this trail with us. And thank you to W Supply for hosting the podcast and supporting what we do. Be sure to check them out and go to wsupply.com for all of your hound needs. Until next time, keep your dogs fed right, your boots muddy, and we'll see you down the trail.
Tailgate drops before the light, coolers packed and the rig sitting right, tracking collars charged,
beeping green. Boots in the bed and the rifle's clean. Dog box rattling, engines hum. We're chasing bear till the day is done. Old Ring barking like he knows what's near. Nose to the wind, tail full of cheer. From the Virginia mountains to the Carolina clay, we're burning fuel and miles each day. Every turn's another tale. Through mountain mist and paper trails, we see the sunset red in Tennessee. Rise through the fog in old WV, North Carolina's pines echo loud with the cry of a hard-run hound. New York forest, Maine's deep snow, Vermont valley's where the black bears go. Truck keeps rolling, wheels don't care. We're chasing daylight, chasing bear. Rest stops few, the roads are long, but the fire in our hearts still burns strong. Wisconsin mornings cutting crisp and clear, Canada's wildwoods drawing near. Still got states we ain't run, but that hound dog fever won't let us quit. We see the sunset red in Tennessee, rise through the fog. Chasing bear. Gas station coffee, Alpha XL on the dash. Another back road, another bear track. Friends made fast and stories told slow. Under stars where only hunters go. We see the sunrise gold in Canadian air. And it sets on a trail down in Appalachia. Packing steel and leather, grit and care. We're built for the road and chasing bear. So load the dogs and slam the gate. There's a trail ahead, we won't be late. From dawn to dusk, we're always there. Chasing daylight, chasing them bears.